WNYC is supported by 92nd Street Y's Unterberg Poetry Center, the voice of literature, featuring appearances by Mark Strand, Pico Iyer, Henry Louis Gates, Marilyn Robinson, John Irving, Kay Ryan, and Michael Chabon. Tickets at 92y.org/poetry.
Hi, this is Leonard Lopate. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1997, Frank Jump noticed a mural from the early 1900s painted on the side of a Harlem building, and it led to his investigating and photographing the thousands of chipped and fading ads all around the city. In his new book, Fading Ads of New York City, Mr. Jump discusses the history of these hand-painted marketing tools, which he refers to as ghost signs, and how working on the project has helped him cope with his own diagnosis of HIV/AIDS. It's published by the History Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Frank Jump to our show today. Hello.
Thanks for having me back.
And we should point out that we have a slideshow on our show page of many of the ghost signs that we will be discussing in the next 20 minutes or so. You say that many of these signs were considered eyesores in their time?
Around 100 years ago, there was the City Beautiful movement, and people were a bit upset about having some guy chewing tobacco on the corner of their block, so they tried to stop it, but it was part of the urban landscape. And
now a City Beautiful movement would want to preserve these things. Contemporary fashion designers, photographers, graphic designers often emulate some of the older design aesthetics that we find in these ads.
Yeah. Well, you said that I call them ghost signs. I mean, they were called ghost signs before I discovered them. But I actually called them fading ads because I drew the parallel between my own unexpected long life and the unexpected long life of these signs. So I always call them fading ads. I always kind of shied away from the word ghost because it represented something that died.
Mm-hmm. So you link what happened with you with the HIV/AIDS diagnosis with this project, even though they don't seem to be connected, partly because you've lived a lot longer than you ever imagined you would?
Right. When I first discovered this project, I already had lived 5 years past they already, you know, my diagnosis. So
is this before the cocktail?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I started my cocktail probably in 92. And then when I went back to college to get my bachelor's degree, I was a little less unsure about my health, and then today it's not even it's really nothing that I think about every day anymore, but it used to be constantly on my mind.
W.M. Stage, who wrote the introduction to your book, says that he sees three elements of time in your work: the time shown by the ads that are fading away, the time that you, the photographer, chose to capture in them, and the timeline that your book creates for the reader. Were those considerations that you were thinking about when you were working on the project, or is he reading a lot more into your work than you might have?
Well, no, there's always the element of time that I was aware of. I became more aware of it when I had an interaction with my audience. I went online back in 99 with the Fading Ad Campaign website, and I met Andrew Irving, who wrote the foreword. He's a professor of visual anthropology. And he did his thesis on HIV-positive artists who, when they find out that they're HIV-positive, they experience time in an accelerated way, and somehow in their art it's reflected. So I became aware of it actually because of my audience.
Do you think you've discovered most of these fading ads, or people have alerted you to most of them?
I mean, I'm sure there are always more out there. I mean, there are some that I've never bothered documenting because they were so well documented by others, like Walter Crutchfield, who really did a great, wonderful job between 14th and 42nd. And so he's more specific to the fashion industry and the garment district. So, I mean, there's a lot more out there, I'm sure. And one day I'm sure there's going to be a Dutch sign from the 1640s being uncovered.
Well, you have photos of the city's oldest advertisement that we know about, a sign for J.A. Keel's Carriage Manufactory and Repair, and that's in Times Square?
Yeah.
Can we still see that?
No.
That's
no,
gone?
That's, yeah, they built something up against that pretty quickly. I actually got alerted to that very urgently. Please go over there and take this shot before it gets covered up. And I got there before they started ramming holes through it, and they put beams to support the adjacent building.
How many of these ads have been covered up or torn down in recent years?
I would say a little bit more than half are gone. What's surprising is my first ad, the Omega Oil sign, is still there so vibrantly, you know, as it was the first day I saw it.
And that's a sign on West 147th Street. We pass these signs all the time. I know I've passed them, been a little curious about them, and then that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you got really interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, at first it was because I thought they were beautiful, and it was the work of some artist, you know, maybe 70, 80 years ago that was still on the side of a wall. So I saw them as, you know, works of art. And then after I saw the parallel with the help of my mentor of my own unexpected long life, they started to resonate on a whole other level for me.
What was Omega Oil?
Omega Oil was like a, I would say, like a Ben Gay of its day.
And then there's the Syrup of Figs, another elixir whose ad you document in your book.
Right.
So these are over-the-counter cure-all medicines, and I guess that had special significance for you.
Well, I mean, Syrup of Figs was mostly a laxative, as was Fletcher's Castoria. So, I mean, even back 100 years ago, people talked about, you know, did you go nice? So it was one of those products that I guess did well, and you don't really see a lot of Syrup of Figs anymore. But
Fletcher's Castoria lasted into our times. I don't know if it's still being made. That sign in Chinatown is one that I've been very familiar with over the years. Are any of the things that these ads are for still being made?
Well, I guess Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
that's the big one. The Baby Ruth candy, which was recently covered up by a building, you know, is now owned by, I think, Nestle's, but it originated with Curtis Candies, which was an early candy company.
So some of these things are not gone. They're just simply covered by taller buildings, that have been put up by in front of them.
Mm-hmm. Only to be revealed again one day when they tear down those glass and brick structures.
And you mentioned Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot of these ads all over town?
Well, it's all over the country. I mean, that's probably the most ubiquitous ad in the nation, I would say. Fletcher's Castoria, I think, is more New York, if you had to categorize it as a New York ad. I don't remember seeing Fletcher's anywhere else, but Coca-Cola is found all over the country.
I'm sure that you've seen fading ads on the streets of buildings all over New York City. My guest, Frank Jump, has done more than just admire them. Now you can find at least 100 of them in his new book called Fading Ads of New York City. And we have posted some of them on our website at WNYC.org. Not just Coke signs, you also include an advertisement from a Guinness brewery located in Long Island City. I always thought that Guinness was made in Ireland.
Yeah, they had a short run here in Long Island City. I believe in the 50s and 60s, but I don't think it lasted much longer than that.
You say that advertising is and always has been the realm of the modern artist. I always thought that a distinction was made, that advertising was meant to sell stuff.
Well, I mean, you see art being used all the time to sell things that aren't even what they're advertising. I mean, there's cars are being sold with all types of imagery that's not related to cars at all. So there's an art form to making signs. So it's really a modern form of take a look at Andy Warhol, what he focused on.
Well, the pop 60s. Artists yeah. saw art in advertisements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember being in love with the Campbell's soup can label. Even before I realized that Andy Warhol was doing that.
Well, I always thought the label was a lot better than the soup. Uh-huh. You say that you'd rather see these advertisements fade instead of being restored by preservationists. Have there been attempts to preserve some of them?
Well, there have been attempts to have them not be covered by other ads here in New York. In other cities, there have been restorations where they'll repaint them to bring them back to the original color that they were. It's kind of like when you walk into the Sistine Chapel and you look up and you look at the latest version of Michelangelo. It's so bright, you don't expect it to be so vivid, and it's not really the original painting anymore. They went in and they've gone in and touched it up.
I'm not going to get into that debate.
Yeah. But it's not the same. You know, it's not what it was. So you changed it somehow.
Well, in New York, there's been debate also over whether we should knock down old buildings and put up new ones. And these ads, as charming as they are, do represent valuable ad space, don't they?
Sure. I don't want to seem like someone who wants to stand in the way of progress. If it's going to get covered, it's going to get covered. I mean, someone has to make the fading ads for the next century. So if people are painting signs over them, chances are that paint will peel anyway and reveal the earlier one. And if it's a good enough quality paint these days, then it'll be the fading ad for 100 years from now.
There are people still doing hand-painted signs sure. around town. There's somebody who did one right near my house, and I suspect that they'll just paint over it and do something else down the line. There's a company called Colossal Media.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that as part of the same tradition?
Oh, yeah. I've had a collaboration with them over the years. I've supported their work and been asked to actually write letters for them in their defense of covering up something.
Well, these signs also tell us a lot about the history of the city and the changing history of the city. There are many ads for foods and markets, and one of the more interesting signs is located at the Fulton Street Fish Market. Can you tell us about that ad?
I think that one has been covered up.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, because I've gone back and I don't see it anymore.
Maybe they'll move it to the Bronx.
Maybe they will, like everything else. Yeah, I mean, I used to go visit some of the signs just to see if they were still there. And I remember going back to that and not seeing it. But I found other ones while going back to look at that.
Do you have any favorites?
Yeah. I think, aside from Omega Oil, which was my first, and Reckitt's Blue, which got put on the front page of the Metro section in 98, I love Anne Rappaport's music. I just thought that was the most beautiful ad I've ever seen.
Well, many of these signs, your photos anyway, go back to the 90s and the early 2000s. Did you have enough to publish a book then, or did you have to wait until now to have a big enough selection to do a book of this sort?
Well, this book basically just chronicles a very brief period in the very beginning of the project. So these were all taken within the first 2 years. So I had them all back in 97 and 98.
And why have they not been published until now?
I was close to getting a book deal, but it fell through. And two master's degrees later, I was asked to write a 56,000-word manuscript in 30 days, and I would not have been able to have done that 14 years ago. It just would have been,
Yeah, but there are probably things you did then that you wouldn't do now, like walking alongside the J train.
Yeah, I'm a little
to take a photograph.
Was
that on the L?
Yeah, I'm a little more careful now. I'm 51, so I'm not able to climb walls like I used to, but you have to be careful these days. And this was all done prior to 9/11. So it was at a time when I was able to ring doorbells in even Manhattan and get into people's apartments and hang out their window.
And total strangers would let you in sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
The book called Fading Ads of New York City has a foreword by Dr. Andrew Irving and an introduction by William Stage, an epilogue by Kathleen Hulser, and text by the photographer himself, Frank Jump. It is published by History Books, and I want to thank you. The History Press.
History Press, mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for coming by again. A reminder that people will find some of the images on our website at WNYC.org. If you want to see them all and read the text, I guess you're going to have to go out and buy that book.
Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.